Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we will be learning from Sophie Dingerville, Global Product Partnerships and Innovation Director of BP Pulse. Sophie, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
Thank you, Nicolas, for having me. And I'm joining from London. Beautiful autumn. Glad to be here with you today. Really, the driver for me has always been to make an impact for people and for the planet. And I have two teenagers at home, and they say, "Mom, what are you doing for future generations?" So I'm very glad that right now I'm really focused on accelerating the decarbonization of mobility as a global partnership director for BP Pulse. We are the EV charging business of BP. And this role has a component very close to corporate venturing in terms of strategic collaboration with startups, as well as a decision on acquisition, minority investments. But really my journey in corporate venturing, I think I started as a young person because I really loved math and I continued to love math. And so I studied university and studied telecom, with telecom specifically digital signal processing, neural networks and AI. So this is the mid 90s. We don't call it AI. It's called neural networks. And I think I will become an academic and I go to Australia. I work for the CSIRO, which is the research center in Australia on image processing. And then I have the opportunity to go and work in Spain at the Universidad Politécnica de Madrid, same in neural networks, and I become impatient. I have the feeling that I'm really working on fantastic opportunities to classify images, but it will take 7 years before this can be actually implemented on computers. And I decide to join a startup at its very beginning. But in reality, what I thought would take 7 years took 14 years for Google when they launched the first image classification search engine. So I was quite right to be impatient back then. So I joined a new provider of digital television by satellite, very beginning. And in less than 4 years, we went 0 to 1 million subscribers, from one employee to 1,000 employees. And the company eventually was acquired by a global media group. And back then I had a very technical job. You can imagine, coming from research background, I was in charge of the encoding of the TV signals and the access control and the interactivity, so very techie. And I felt that it was very important to understand a little bit more and learn more about strategy and finance to continue to make this positive impact I've always wanted to make. I had the opportunity to join a strategy consulting firm. I did their internal MBA, learned a lot about corporate finance, and had the privilege to be approached to join a corporate venture capital firm that was part of a bank. And this group was preparing their spin-out. They were moving from CVC to independent financial VC, and they were looking for someone who really understood digital image. That was in the early 2000s, when everything was becoming digital image with YouTube and digital advertising and digital photography. So I joined a CVC, knowing it would become an institutional VC, with a very techie background as a specialist in digital image processing, and also knowing a little bit about strategy and about finance. So that was a good start. So we had a corporate, multi-corporate fund investing in early stage companies in mainland Europe, and then also multi-corporate fund and financial fund investing in Asia and in the US. I also was invited to be on the investment committee of an early stage multi-corporate fund in Germany, investing in B2B enterprise software. So I really saw, as a financial investor, how corporate VC expect the financial LPs to deliver value to the mothership. And some of our investments were extremely successful, returning very good financial returns. And for the corporates, it was very important to have access to innovation, of course, have this level of financial returns, but also the element of the reputation for the corporate VC associated with financial funds delivering the right value, delivering the right message on the market was also key. So I had the opportunity after 15 years with this fund to move to the UK and join this time a purely corporate venture capital firm, Munich Re, the largest reinsurer in the world, and really running the operations in Europe with the rest of the team in San Francisco. So after this, when I was approached by BP to join their clean energy activities and bring this expertise I had in financial VC as well as corporate VC and my operational background, having worked in a startup, I thought it was a great moment to help with climate and really making a positive impact on the planet here.
Very nice. So can you first share how much of that scientific and technical background helps you even today?
Yeah, so it continues to help me today, almost on an everyday basis, for three reasons. The number one is the discipline structured approach of taking a complex problem and breaking down into smaller problems and just tackle each problem after the other one. So that's the engineering background that you were mentioning. The second one is it helps create trust with new partners, with colleagues in new markets, because having a single source of truth based on a common understanding of a scientific or technical topic actually creates trust in an uncertain environment, and we are definitely in an uncertain environment. And the third one is because I am working in areas where part of the solution comes from a technical solution as well as a human solution, as well as finding the right financing and understanding the right time to market. So there's the intellectual structure, how to approach a complex problem. There's creating bridge and common language and trust with an ecosystem of individuals and stakeholders. And fundamentally, we need tech to solve some of these challenges.
So that's for the intellectual structure. But you said earlier on, which I loved because it's about the feelings. One was about being impatient and one was a sense of wonder. Can you share about why that makes you a good investor?
So impatient, I must say, every day I work on my patience. It's really about being impatient when it's the right time to be impatient, move at pace. And being patient, especially if we are too early vis-a-vis a market trend or a market that matures. So quick, let's be ready and then be patient and have the right signal, the right market signal to launch the product. There's so many fantastic ideas that were launched too early.
So maybe you could comment, how do you see people saying VC should be patient capital?
So VC should be patient capital when it comes to the J curve of the valuation of a startup. That's the J curve, which is the first years are years of investment, are years of finalizing, if it's a Series A, finalizing the first strong product. If it's Series B, is finding the right product market fit. If it's Series C, it's about launching new countries or diversifying new products. So each step happens at a certain moment in time, and that means more investment before this turns into value creation for the startup. Impatient, because as soon as an experiment or a trial fails, just learn from that. Do we double down or do we just say, not for us right now, let's focus on something else? So impatient to get the learning in order to identify if that was the wrong decision. No problem at all. Just adapt.
It's an amazing golden nugget. I like to say that for me, patience is about a sense of purpose, but the impatience is about the sense of urgency. Let's not wait until we learn something doesn't work and let's make sure we fix what we can fix. And so with that, let's talk about fast growth. So you were in a startup. What do you remember from that experience of very fast growth? People talk to 0 to 1, but for you, it was 0 to 1 million subscribers. Can you share about what that experience gave you as an investor, but also maybe some of the biases?
So this hypergrowth during 4 years happened as a consequence of months, if not years, of preparation. I joined day one. Most of the preparation had been done before. So I have to be very open. I joined a team that had a vision and it was about execution. Product market fit was extremely well thought. It was really about having a product with unique content. And one of the unique content was access to the national television that were not accessible in certain geographies. The only way for people to receive this television was to have a dish, a satellite dish.
That's so cool. So one thing you also said proactively is about the value of constructive conflict. Mm-hmm. And here I feel like there is a golden nugget. And everything you've described means that you have clear empathy for the entrepreneurs. You understand what they are going through and all the challenges. But can we maybe zoom on the constructive conflict? Is there any best practice you've seen both from engaging in constructive conflict, but also in helping entrepreneurs understand the value of constructive conflict for their own projects?
Absolutely. And constructive conflict is the quintessence of a well-functioning, high-performing board. So there are some prerequisites. The founder has to be very good at communicating, at explaining to the shareholder, whether it's a corporate investor or a financial investor, what is it that he is building? What is his vision? What is his plan? What are the milestones? The corporate investor, it's important to take the time to understand the business. It's important to talk the same language, the same vocabulary, the same words. And therefore, first, I need to ensure that if I give advice, this is going to be useful. This is going to be of value because this is tailored to what the company is building, to what the founder's vision is. Constructive feedback starts with a lot of listening, a lot of learning, and sometimes it requires a lot of conversation with other shareholders, other board members before going and having this challenge with the CEO. When it comes to the value a corporate VC can bring to a company, this is really broad. They come with wonderful industry expertise and experience, extremely good at some industrial processes, supply chains, or key metrics, what good looks like in this industry. In order to make all this knowledge useful to the CEO and the founder, this needs to be translated, adapted to the specific case of this small startup. And so the constructive challenge is a consequence of this good level of communication between the investor and the CEO.
And I think you're setting a good framework in terms of constructive feedback, constructive conflict as a way of optimizing decision-making in complex environment with high level of uncertainty. But sometimes this difficult feedback you give to the entrepreneurs could be tainted, even if unfairly, depending on your position, whether you're a board member, whether you're an observer, because of the CVC behind. So maybe I want to go into the granularity of the different engagements that entrepreneurs will see from a CVC investor, because we have the shareholder, we have the board, we have commercial engagements. Do you mind walking through the three levels, but also how to think about each of them from the entrepreneur's point of view?
Yes, wonderful. The first level started with actually the commercial collaboration. So the corporate creating a new category of product for a new type of customer that this startup was able to approach. So let's say purely commercial to start with. This element has to be strong by itself, has to stand on its legs by itself. The moment there's the thinking that the corporate should invest in the startup to subsidize the commercial agreement, or we are going to make such a wonderful commercial contract with the startup that it's going to subsidize even if we lose everything from our shareholders. This is the beginning of the trouble. So because the value and also the time that goes in this commercial agreement is usually short term, like 1, 2, 3 years, short term when it comes to venture capital scheme, venture capital thinking. Venture capital shareholder in a startup means non-liquid investments, means J-curve of equity valuation, means 5, 7, 10 years between the moment I invest and the moment I exit the company. Then with this commercial relationship, the startup starts to have this unfair competitive advantage. They go to market and they can sell their product because it embeds our own product, and they have the brand association. This startup is associated with the brand of this strong corporate. This must be a wonderful product. And so the shareholder might think, the corporate might think, I would like to have access to the equity appreciation. I am a key element of the success of this startup, and I would like to learn more about their market, about their product. Therefore, I'm making this financial driven and strategic driven investment as a shareholder. Even if the commercial agreement stops, I still need to be strongly a believer in the value of the startup itself. It's now a shareholder decision. I think that this company is going to go from a valuation of 10 to 100. I'm going to make my multiple 10 on my early stage investment. And why am I investing in this company? Because I think I will bring value. I think I will help them expand in new markets because I've got presence in these geographies where these customers, or I think I'm going to help with access to expertise for the next generation of the product of the startup.
So I want to pause here because there's a golden nugget, which is you're not describing what we get to the corporate, you're talking about what the corporate give to increase the odds of success to that startup.
Because the more the startup is successful, the more I'm going to learn and the more I'm going to have an appreciation of the value of the shareholder.
That is a golden nugget. Because most CVCs who are starting with little experience all think about what do we get versus how do we help the startup be successful and we grow with them. So I really wanted to pause on that key point you just made.
Yes, and it's when it's very successful, both get and give. And so that brings to the level of the board, to sit or not to sit on the board. That is the question for the corporate VC. And here again, I will take the perspective of the founder. As a founder, I want to work with the best of the best. Mm. I want a board that usually has 5 to 7 members. More than this, it becomes quite inefficient, a lot of noise. Less than this, it can become a little bit conflictual because there are too few people. So 5, let's say 5, 7. Early stage company, usually the leader of the rounds will ask for a board seat. It's very important to take this seat also as a value add investor. And so to be on the board, not to be on the board, what is the strategy of the CVC? Is it purely strategic? Is it purely financial? Is it both strategic and financial? If there is no financial objective in this first CVC, for example, I would strongly encourage to bring a lot of expertise from former entrepreneurs or purely financial investors at the board. The risk sitting on the board when you're a corporate VC is because you're so passionate about innovation, about learning from the company and sharing everything with the company is that this element of cash, of finance, becomes a second level on the second priority. And we all know cash is king with startups.
Last week I saw a sentence which was very strong. Cash first, profit next. So we talked about commercial engagements and being on the board. Now let's talk about shareholder and how that is even different with board.
So shareholder is really either I want to make a financial return as a financial shareholder. I want to make a return on the innovation I'm going to learn. So the shareholder will have a clear picture of what good looks like for this investment. What are the key metrics that will measure my success? Is it financial? Is it financial or strategic? Is it aligned with the interest of the startup? And this is something I really love about my job right now. It's all about creating alignment between the corporate and the startups. The best alignment is the more the startup succeeds, the more the corporate succeeds. Yep. This is why it's so delicate, I would say, to find the right dynamic, shareholder, board member, commercial partner, when the corporate is the client of the startup. Because if I am the client of the startup as a corporate, as a shareholder, yes, I would like my investment to return really good value, but I would like to be exclusive in using this product. I don't want my competitors to use this same product because I want to keep my unique competitive advantage. And I want to pay the lowest price for this product. This is where the board member can be very helpful here. Creating this bridge, creating this alignment of interest between the interest of the shareholder and the interest of the commercial partner in the corporate. So as a shareholder, it is important to know what is my investment thesis. What is my investment thesis? What is my time scale? Do I want quick returns because there's a change in strategy or because there's a need for cash optimization? Am I more a long-term investor? And things can start to tilt. And this is why some corporate, they will at some point decide to outsource the activity, their corporate venture capital activities, to a independent team. This independent team can have people from the corporate, and just to ensure that there's a time scale for this fund that is different than the time scale that the corporate has to keep vis-a-vis its own shareholders, its own market, if the corporate is a listed company.
I'm going to ask you a fun question for the last question. Now, something you mentioned much earlier in the interview is reputation. And I think that's probably so important for corporate VCs. Many corporate VCs in the past had bad practices that gave a bad rep for every CVCs, even though you talked about Munich Re, a great CVC, and many are very good CVCs. So when we talk about reputation and brand building, how should a CVC and their mothership think about best practices for commercial engagement with a portfolio company?
It's really about being thoughtful about what are the assets of the corporate that, as a CVC, I can bring to the startup.
Oh, I love it.
Usually it's 1, 2, 3 assets maximum. Having said that, I think part of the reputation of what we've seen in the market with CVCs was due to tourism, putting one ticket at one round and then not being there for the next round, or even not being there to sign documents, or jumping from one board to another one and asking random questions. So it's really this is now behind us. I think there's now a lot of knowledge, a lot of good practices. It goes also with individuals. Some individuals who've had a very successful track record in the way they care about the startup they invest in, they genuinely care. They will genuinely mm-hmm. spend time. They will genuinely do the extra mile to find the person in their organization with the right level of influence, the right level of experience and network to help. So there's an element of individual as well. Who do you have in your corporate VC, and do they really care about the startups they invest in?
Very nice. Sophie, thank you so much for your time. It was full of golden nuggets, and I think your range of experience shines through the podcast. So thank you very much.
Well, it's been a pleasure being interviewed by you, Nicolas, and it's a great initiative, right? Sharing knowledge. And I've personally enjoyed watching interviews with colleagues, and I hope people will enjoy watching this interview.